Hello and welcome to Just Marcus Podcast 365. My name is Shay and today is April 30th, 2019. Well, I hope you all had a wonderful weekend and happy Tuesday. I didn't have a podcast yesterday. I didn't think we had a lot of information to discuss, but today we have a lot of information here. And the markets here in the U.S. so far today are flat. Dow and the S&P 500 are pretty flat right now, but we have the Nasdaq is down about 80 basis points, and that's largely due to Alphabet. Google, G-O-O-G is the symbol. It's down a lot because of its revenue growth is declining, and that's hurting its stock price, and it's hurting the Nasdaq most because it's a tech company, right? So that's where it's hurting it most, but it's also a large percentage of the Nasdaq index. It's about 16-17% of the Nasdaq 100. So that's why you're seeing such a huge impact on that index alone, is because of Google, of Alphabet. It's really has a huge weighting, and that's why you're seeing this huge move downwards on that index. Otherwise, the index would be just as flat as the other ones are today. So you're seeing that happen. And then, of course, I want to talk about a few of the economic indicators that came out, anything from personal income, consumer spending, core inflation, you know, the Chicago PMI, the consumer confidence. As we on this podcast, you know, we emphasize these economic indicators greatly, and we follow them in detail because, you know, remember, they tell us about the current situation, the past situation, and many of them are leading indicators as well. So, for the economy as a whole. So that's how we follow them very, very closely. In addition to that, you know, we'll talk about a couple of the headlines that I saw yesterday and today that are meaningful for you as an investor to think about as you're investing your funds. All right, let's get into some of the economic indicators today. So we'll go through some of the March data that came out, and then we'll get into some of the February and then April information. So March data showed a few things. So the personal income data that came out on Monday yesterday for March showed a growth of 0.1%. So that means that personal income in March only grew at 0.1%. Expectations were that they were going to grow at 0.4. Now, that is much lower than expected. It's not a worrying sign because incomes haven't grown a whole lot, but this is definitely something that I would say that is to keep your eye on, because remember, wages are one of those things that the Fed looks at as their barometer for real inflation. And as long as there's a lack of wage inflation, Fed will keep monetary policy loose, right? So that's something to look at. The next number we want to discuss is the consumer spending. For March, it definitely rebounded. It came in at 0.9% growth from 0.1% growth in January. So we're seeing a big rebound in March. And we, of course, looked at that in detail on Friday when we discussed the GDP number. And we talked about, you know, all the different components of GDP and how the consumer consumption, the consumption rebounded, you know, and it was almost 0.8% of the total GDP number, which was much weaker than expected. And we talked about the fact that this is probably, you know, a rebound from March, right? So that's really, you know, we were right about that. And so that this number has rebounded, and hopefully it continues to grow and rebound here in April. We obviously don't have the April number, because we are in April still. So when that number comes out, we'll of course talk about it and see the trend, overall trend. Remember, we always want to talk about, you know, long term trends, not talk about one data point, because a single data point could be misleading. And we want to make sure that as we're assessing and analyzing data, we are coming up with good conclusions here. So the next part I want to talk about is the core inflation data. Core inflation came in at zero growth. So in March, you know, there was zero growth there. And the number in January was 0.1. So we are seeing that inflation is really not going anywhere. It's benign at best. A lot of it's just due to food and energy. Core inflation doesn't exclude food and energy. So you're seeing that inflation is not an issue. That's why the Fed is probably not inclined to raise rates anytime soon because the inflation is not an issue. We saw this with the personal income number. We're seeing this from core inflation as well. And the consumer spending data that came out today, and then what we discussed in the GDP number, the advanced GDP number that came out Friday, all those reasons tell us that the Fed is definitely not going to raise rates. They're probably going to keep at things as is. Maybe some analysts and some strategists out there are thinking about a cut in the future, maybe by the end of the year. I don't see that happening right now, but that's a possibility. Now, the next data point I want to discuss with you guys is the pending home sales index for March. Came in at 3.8%, so the index showed growth. So that means there are more homes on sale than there were in February or January, if you will. And I believe in January it was negative 0.1%. So you're seeing that a rebound there as well in March. Very, very good sign. What we need to talk about is why is it important? Now, pending home sales are exactly that, pending, meaning that these homes are under contract. So there's a buyer and sellers are under contract to purchase a home. It's an escrow. The deal hasn't closed yet. And it's a good sign when this number is increasing because, remember, if a pending home sale is there and there's all these homes that are under contract, eventually, likelihood, most of these homes are going to close, right? Now, we don't know where they're closing or what have you regionally, but they're eventually going to close. And that's going to create, a commission for the realtor. You know, a person that sold the house is going to get cash for it or going to get funds for it. And the person that bought the house just bought the house, but now they're going to buy furniture. They're going to buy different things to fix it up and, improve, do some home improvements. So all these things are really, really positive. And when you have this number that's growing and it's a positive number, that means that it's good for the economy as a whole. And home prices are one of the best indicators for job growth, for economic growth. And this is a very good sign for an economy that's rebounding from a slowdown here end of last year and the beginning of this year. All right, let's move on to a couple of the April data points. So we'll talk about the Chicago PMI and then the Consumer Confidence Index. The Chicago PMI came in at 52.6. The last number was 58.7. Now, this number is quite interesting. This number really measures the economic activity of the businesses in the Midwest region, and this number is a good barometer to give us as money managers, give us an idea on what the ISM manufacturing number will probably look like that's coming out probably tomorrow, right? So this number is interesting, the fact that it came in much lower than expected. This is not a good sign on how the ISM may look, but let's see on what the number looks like tomorrow. The market doesn't really have a major reaction to this, maybe a mild reaction to this number, but then the ISM manufacturing number is the market is very, very sensitive to the ISM number that's coming out tomorrow. So this number was definitely much weaker than what we thought it would be. And hopefully this is not a real, this is just a bump in the road here. And as long as it doesn't fall below 50, if it falls below 50, it means it's a contractionary environment. Anything above 50 is at 52.6. That means it's still expansion, but at a slower rate than previous months. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Now, so good news, the consumer confidence index rebounded greatly. That number came in at, for April, at about 129.2. The previous number was 124.2, and the expectation for this number was only about 126.9. So this number came in much better than expected, which is good. Remember, consumer confidence is very, very important to our economy. 70% of our economy is consumption. this is a very, very good sign. So if we, even if you have a little bit of drop in business confidence or in business expansion, you know, as long as you have this consumer confidence keeps going up, you have plenty of jobs, I think that we will stay away from a recession most likely, as long as, you know, the business confidence doesn't drop too far or business activity doesn't drop too far. So given all the information that we learned today about the markets, I'm sorry, about the economic indicators from March and April, we're seeing a rebound from the first 2 months of the year in March, and it seems like April is kind of flat a little bit here and there. There are some indicators that are showing some positive rebounds, and others are showing that there is still some slowing down happening, right? So kind of a mixed picture so far in April. I think that we still don't have a good idea on how things are going. I think we need some additional data. And then we, of course, you know, last week on Friday, we discussed the GDP data, and that data showed, if you look under the hood, or if you peel back the onion, if you will, that the data wasn't actually as strong as the top line number there either. So we're seeing some really mixed data and definitely seeing some slowdown in the economy, but we're not seeing a really abrupt slowdown where we're worried about a recession just yet. You know, are the risks increasing? Probably not yet. I think they're probably about the same where they were about 2 weeks ago. I don't think they have increased significantly. Because there is a lot of noise in these data points because of the government shutdown and the way they were reported and the timing of the reports, all those things. So we have to keep all those things in mind. So as we are looking at this data. Oh, one last indicator that I forgot to mention is the employment cost index. Now, this data is for just Q1, the first 3 months of this year. So January, February, and March. This number came in at 0.7 increase. So we're seeing that employment costs are increasing very slightly, very much aligned to the income number that's not growing all that much, and the wages are not growing that much either. So we're seeing that businesses can easily hire new employees. The cost of hiring new workers is not very expensive. It's not growing at a higher rate, so it's not going to take away from earnings, and it's not going to take away from their bottom line a whole lot, as long as they're making the right investments in the right areas, right? So given all that, so definitely not an area where the Fed will say, hey, we need to raise rates because employment costs are going up too high. That can eventually cost inflation in those kind of things as well. So definitely something to think about. Not a great number, but not a bad number either. So let's talk about a couple of headlines out there. One of them today I read was about the infrastructure bill that Democratic leaders and Donald Trump, the president of the United States, have agreed to a goal of a $2 trillion package of infrastructure spending over the next, you know, decade or plus probably. And that package is going to include investments in, you know, public utilities, water, broadband, and the transportation system. So that's a really, really, really good sign for the market as a whole. That's the right type of spending we need in this country, because it creates the most jobs, construction jobs, labor jobs, high paying jobs that have benefits. And of course, you know, there's a huge multiplier factor when you spend money on things like infrastructure, especially in a country where we have some infrastructure problems, you know, both from you know, the utility side, power side, and the transportation side. When you're looking at this kind of a bill, it's most likely going to be funded probably by the federal government largely, but then there's going to be some of the package that's going to be dependent on state and local governments as well, right? So you can have where, I don't have any numbers or anything like that. There's nothing that's been reported, but it could be like a 75% financing of this infrastructure package from the federal government, and maybe like a 25% that the states and local governments will be responsible for raising funds for and to invest, basically. But regardless of it, it's going to be a good thing for the U.S. economy as a whole. We need the infrastructure, we need the jobs, and that's a great way to continue to grow our economy as a whole. And a $2 trillion package makes a lot of sense. Now, if you think about 10 years ago during the financial crisis, and we had that TARP bill, and then we had a stimulus package, remember? That package was only $700 billion, right? And that helped us get out of the recession that we were in. So the TARP and I believe the TARP was another $700 billion, and then this was the stimulus package was also $700 billion. So you only spent about $1.4 trillion, relatively speaking. This is a $2 trillion package, very stimulative. Now, if you're an investor, you're thinking, hey, where can I invest, if this thing comes through? Well, if they're investing in broadband, then companies that sell fiber or they lay fiber down, those are companies that are going to benefit greatly, from this package if it's actually negotiated through and passed. Right? It's too early to talk too much about it, but sectors of the U.S. markets that will benefit greatly are of course a technology in this case. You're going to have the utilities that they're also going to benefit from it. And then, of course, you can have the industrial sector. So companies like, Caterpillar and John Deere and, companies that have huge equipment that sell cement and steel and all those things, right? So those are the areas. But as a whole, it's going to be a great stimulus for the economy and the market as a whole, because then, you're not going to be dependent on just healthcare and technology to drive the market up. You're going to have other sectors that are also coming growing, and the material sector, companies that manufacture steel and iron ore, and the natural resources companies will also participate in this. And of course, energy will also be a great beneficiary of this as well. So it'd be a great broad brush of growth for the U.S. economy, and then maybe at that point we can probably see some, as long as the package is large enough and there's enough money going in it, I think it could be a very stimulus environment if this kind of deal actually goes through Congress and the president does sign it. So it's a good sign. Let's see what happens next. The last thing I want to talk about is the president, Donald Trump, getting involved with the Fed's decision making. Now, as a money manager and investing money for over a decade, 14 years, we do not like uncertainty when it comes to the Fed. We know who the Fed members are. We know how they make decisions. They're data driven. They are apolitical. When it comes to monetary policy, it has to be independent. The president of the United States, President Donald Trump, asked the Fed today to cut rates by 1%, right? Based on what information? I mean, to me, he's making it a political reason. I think he can say whatever he wants. He's the president of the United States. But as a money manager, it makes me really uncomfortable, because as a money manager, our assumptions for risk and everything else are driven by independence of the Fed, that they will have, that, they are responsible for two things: price stability, right? Price stability and maximum employment. Those are the two areas that the Fed has to focus on. And to me, if it's becoming political, those risks rise significantly. And as a money manager, we would have to adjust our risk models. And then you can have an environment where, you can have a much riskier investment environment than we are currently pricing in, and that can hurt the markets as a whole. So when it comes to the Fed, I wish the president will stay out of it and let the Fed do his job and let him do his job when it comes to infrastructure spending, stimulus spending, taxes, or whatever else he wants to do. But please stay out of the Fed's decision-making process, because that's one independent body that we want to make sure stays independent, and they are there for two things: maximum employment and price stability. And I'm trying to keep this as apolitical as possible. I do not want to get into politics. I don't want to mention who I follow or who I don't follow. But I do not like the fact that when somebody is getting involved with the Fed as a whole. Well, anyways, I hope you guys had a wonderful start to the week. I enjoyed this podcast today and talking about the economic indicators and talking about the infrastructure bill and its possible benefits, and then, of course, this whole Fed thing. If you enjoyed it, please review us on Apple Podcasts and follow and subscribe to our podcast, so it will automatically be downloaded to your platform when a new one is available. I do these multiple times a week, and as I see that, you know, there's more information that we should talk about as investors, I will get on here and talk about it. Until then, take care, guys. Please remember, this podcast is for information purposes only, and presenters will make every effort to provide accurate information, but assumes no responsibility for accuracy. You should not construe any such information or other materials as legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and there cannot be any assurance that the future performance of any specific investment strategy or products or non-investment related content made reference to directly or indirectly in this podcast will be profitable, equal any corresponding indicated historical performance levels, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Due to various factors, including changing market conditions or applicable laws, the content may no longer be reflective of current opinions or positions. Moreover, you should not assume that any discussion or information contained in this podcast serves as a receipt or as a substitute for personalized investment advice from your advisor. To the extent you should have any questions regarding the applicability of any specific issues discussed, you are encouraged to consult with your professional advisor of your choosing.